All right, let me see if I got this right. Welcome back, or welcome front, if this is your first time joining us. This is the Adventure Game Hotspot podcast. As always, I am Joshua. Wait a minute. No, I'm not. I'm Jack. Who wrote the script anyway? Oh, that's right. Yes, we're doing our first ever role reversal. So I'm Jack. I'm going to be your host for this show. So this could go off the rails really quick. But as always, I have my partner in crime, Joshua. How are you doing, Joshua?
Good. Although, you know, that's a trademark intro. I might have to get 12 cents from you there.
Well, yeah, and never ask a writer to use another person's words. So that is the first and last time I will ever do that. But in the interest of tradition, I had to do that. Anyway, we have a couple of very special guests today who, for anyone watching, are apparently in the Witness Protection Program. But soon we will bring them out of the shadows and have a good talk with them. But we'll have a little bit of a riff first. What's up with you, Joshua? You played anything interesting these days?
Yeah, I've actually been playing a lot of games recently and having a whole lot of fun with it. Yeah, poor Jack only gets the demos all of the time, but we don't. So I am playing, and I'm pulling them up real quick. I just finished I can't think of the name of the game. I'll get back with that one, but I'm playing Islands of Insight, which goes on forever. It goes on forever. It's an MMO. At some point, I'm just going to have to like cut the cord, just stop playing because
it consumes your life.
It has.
I think they boast of 10,000 puzzles or something like that. So,
well, it's great.
Theoretically, there is an end, but not one that anyone can see from wherever they're standing. So
it is nice because, you know, hey, I could play like a 10-minute puzzle and you could kind of get a sense for what you're good at. And you could choose, you know, which kind of puzzles you're jumping into. So I always go to the ones that make me feel really good about myself. And if I have 10 or 15 minutes to go and, you know, before I have to head out, boom, you know, do a little puzzle. I'm playing Legend of Sky. I'm almost done with it. Wonderful. I'm very much, very much enjoying it. Banishers. I finished Banishers, which is kind of an action adventure game.
That's the Don't Nod game, right?
The Don't Nod game. Yeah. I haven't talked to you about that, but I may actually want to review if you don't mind. I know I've got a couple things backed up, but eventually down the road, I would like to review because it is very much an adventure game.
Yeah, you're starting to sell me on it. It looks so actiony, but everything you've told me about it, you know, sort of suggests that, like, there is action, but that's not.
Well, when he says sell it on, I'm like, yeah, I'm selling it on the fact that there's an adventure. The game is okay. You know, it could be better, and with, you know, more games that they put out, I think it will be. But yeah, we'll talk more about that down the line. What about you?
Well, you have been. Now, I have not had time to play any games. I'm dying to play the remake of Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. As regular listeners know, I love the original game, so I'm really looking forward to checking out the remaster. But I haven't had time because, and I don't want to toot my own horn here, I've been too busy writing games or editing games. I've actually edited two different game scripts, one of which is An English Haunting by the Postmodern Adventures, the developer of Nightmare Frames. And I got to say...
Oh, really? You're doing that?
Oh, no, I'm doing the editing of the English localization to make sure it sounds like it was actually written by somebody who speaks English. But it's good. Mm-hmm. You know, I get scripts and spreadsheets, right? It looks like an Excel thing. And it's often in dribs and drabs and not in order. But this one, like, it feels like a real read. And I was getting into it. I'm like, oh, this is good. And I'd get all disappointed if it cut away to a different scene. I'd be going, hey, I want to find out what happened to so-and-so. So, yeah, all I can attest to is the script and the dialogue, but it looks like a winner. Reads like a winner, anyway. And then I'm working on Fogtown. We're ramping up writing for Fogtown, and it's a whole lot of fun. So I love writing comedy. So, you know, it's stressful, but it's so much fun. You know, once you, like, it's hard to, you wake up in the morning and you're kind of draggy or whatever, and you go and sit down and go, okay, now be funny. Like,
Where does
or
that
if you're
come
angry,
from?
if
You
you're
know?
mad at something or grumpy,
Right, exactly. Yeah, but
like a
eventually
fraud.
you find an inn, and it's fun. You know, it feels good to see a game coming together on your own page. So, yeah, I'm looking Can forward
I
to ask it.
you about Fogtown? Your role, I guess, because as a lot of people who do follow Fogtown, they know that there's not only a show that's being pitched, an actual, visual, and then there's a game, an FMV game.
That's right.
So have you started branching into the actual show yet? Or is that something that, or are you strictly working on the FMV game at the moment?
Right. No, the show is pretty much sort of all written
Okay.
and like down on paper before I ever came onto the project. And I was sort of helping promote more of the game aspect of it. So that's why things have been kind of slow on the game front, because we took it back. You know, we've been doing lots of design talks and stuff like that, but then we took a back seat while they worked on the show, which is coming along really nicely. Like the shooting is almost entirely done, kind of thing. But with that winding down, now we get to ramp up into the game, and oh, good. Yes, you know, this is the moment I've been waiting for. So,
Can't wait to meet Sherblock.
yeah, well, you're gonna
Well,
have to wait a little while longer because it takes a while to write, let me tell you. But
they're gonna be at the fanfare though, right?
that's
Like,
right. Yep.
I don't know who all is gonna be at the fanfare, but I'm sure we have our two friends that are gonna be there at least, right?
That's right. Yeah, we'll want to bring them in quickly, but let's talk about what's happening with the fanfare very quickly. You know, tell us what's new, what's happening, what's interesting, Joshua.
Yeah, this is the fun time. We got through, the Kickstarter thing, which was very, very stressful. Now we get to do all of the fun stuff. So, we got the events that are pretty much taking the primary. They're right in front of everything right now with the panels, the fun things that we're going to be doing. And there's a whole lot, it's mostly finalized, but you got to jiggle things and juggle things around a little bit to find out what suits which developer or whoever the guest is for the time and the date and everything. So it's really hard to announce an official panel list and event list. Yes, but we do know that we have the whole Friday night. That's going to be a whole lot of fun. It's going
It
to
sure will.
it's looking absolutely incredible. And then of course we got, well, I guess we'll say what that all is for those that don't know. It's, gosh, it's going to be like an adult talent show for kind of like you got a whole bunch of fun music being played. Al Lowe's going to be playing his gosh, you can't say playing his instrument when
Not
speaking
after
of
saying an adult talent
missing
show,
it
no,
out.
that's
Right.
yeah. Although Al would probably find that hilarious, so
He would.
he would be mad if we didn't say it that way. So.
Yeah, you got to take, even if it's low-hanging fruit, it's good fruit, right?
Exactly.
Which also could be turned into a pun, but anyways, yeah. So we're gonna have a bunch of that, gosh, game show type of thing that we're gonna be doing with the developers and guests, and then after that's the after party, and let's just say we'll have a whole lot more fun with alcohol. So, and anybody who
Yeah.
comes gets a ticket to who comes to the Friday event gets a ticket to that as well, where everybody will be. Some karaoke and some, I don't want to say adult entertainment because that's
No, it's
again,
just not for the kiddies kind of thing, you
yeah,
know?
we'll call it PG-14,
There you go. Yes.
type of setting.
Yeah,
Maybe
I
there
was into
might
a
be a
lot
few
of things
more.
I shouldn't have been at 14, so
Right. Yes. Yeah. I've got some still things drilled in my head that I wish I didn't know back then. But yeah, we may say the F word a few times, and we'll try to avoid that at the panels. And so yeah, that's where we're at. After that, we're really going to start pushing on marketing and getting all the floor layout and everything squared away. But it's going better than I expected.
Yeah. I mean, everything takes time, but you know, incrementally we're getting there and getting things nailed down and guests locked in and stuff like that. So we're starting to promote, you know, people that will definitely be there and you know and stuff. But you know, the final schedule we'll still have to wait a long while
The
longer.
team's
But
amazing, by the way. We have just
oh,
an
absolutely.
incredible team. Like we have to tell them to slow down, actually, hey, take it easy. They are pushing hard, and they want to work, which is amazing. So, but we can't go faster than planning will entail. So we'll allow
And
us
speaking
to.
of tickets,
We do now have tickets on sale on their own. It's no longer limited just to our Kickstarter, which was successful, and we thank everyone who contributed. If you do you recall the address off the top of your head, Joshua?
Yeah, it's adventuregamefanfare.com.
Well, that
And
should be easy to remember.
all right, the whole page is what you can get. You can get
There
your
you
ticket.
go. Okay, so if you missed out
Single
on the
day is
Kickstarter,
yet.
yeah, there's still a chance. Okay, part of the fanfare is having developers come in person and showcase their games. And one developer we really wanted there was the Lightfoot Brothers. They have an amazing game called Sleepytime Village coming up. Unfortunately, I think they're probably a little too far away to make it, but we really want to talk to them, so let us bring in our witness protection guests here and have a chat with James, one of the DNA original Lightfoot Bros, and then an honorary third Lightfoot brother, Steve. Welcome, guys.
Hi, how
Hey,
you doing?
thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're
Thanks
great.
for
How are
having
you
us.
both?
I'm good. I'm at the end of a kind of week-long illness, so I feel like I've been reborn,
Oh,
which
you
is
are
fantastic.
also in a beer garden in the back of a pub,
You're
so
right. Yeah.
you can complain all you like, but there will be no
It,
sympathy from here.
that's very true. Well, that's because of my reborn. Yes, so I'm in my local pub in the garden, having a nice beverage, and it's a ode to this pub is a lot of Sleepytime Village gets coded on my laptop in there, so it's part of the family.
Rumor has it that that's how you end an illness and create other illnesses. Just head on over to the pub.
Yeah,
I'm done
exactly.
with it. You have it now.
Right now, buddy.
No, I'm fully recovered now. I'm like a new person, so it's all is well.
Until tomorrow morning, then we'll have another conversation.
Right. Yeah, that is not illness. That's just a hangover.
It wasn't illness before. He's just going for sympathy. It was a
Just long
hangover. It was
hangover.
just, yeah.
And then he blew it with the pub things. It's not
He rolls in a
That.
wheelchair, and all the ladies come up. Hey.
So, how do you guys know each other, and how did you come to be working together?
Wow.
God.
So, I've known Steve for a long time.
Let's not
We
put a
met.
number on it.
No, we won't put a number on it.
No, let's hear.
But we were both in bands, and Steve recalls that it was at a party, and we were talking about a gig we played. We played together,
Yeah, well, so
or
no, recollections, I mean, this is where it comes back to the pub again. So we definitely played in a whole bunch of gigs together, James and his brother's band and my band at the time, and bands afterwards. And then I have this vague recollection of being at a party somewhere in East London, and this guy talking to me. He was super friendly and talked to me like he knew me really well. And I'm sort of like, I think I know this guy. And this is my first proper memory of James. But then we went on to play loads of gigs with different bands across. I mean, I always liked your stuff anyway. So and they were, James and his brother and his bandmates were all super friendly. So we always hung out. We always stayed in contact. I work with James's brother on music for TV and so on. So it's just been this sort of natural.
And I think, ever since once The Mystery of Woolly Mountain was put out and finished, a few years later I was like, right, I really should make another game, and I started making something completely different. It was like a 2D run and gun adventure, which is still in progress, and hidden away, secret game. But then after a while I was like, I really want to make another point and click adventure, and I'm not one to just focus on one thing. I like spinning plates and juggling. It's just kind of who I am. It's part of my fabric of like that creativity. I love all sorts of things to pull on when I fancy that bit, a change of scene. And I knew Steve, fantastic artist as well as fantastic musician. Does all the music on Sleepytime Village and sound effects. And I'd seen some of the comics he'd kickstarted, and I bought them a great series called Lizard Men. And I thought this could be fantastic for a point and click game. So I approached Steve. I said, listen, whether you like them or not, I want to make point and click adventure out of your comic series. And Steve was like, well, that's very flattering and very interesting. However, I'm working on a graphic novel that I really think would be much better suited for a point and click adventure. So he sent me the then draft, which was, 70% probably fully realized. And I was just blown away by it. And I thought, he's right. This is the one. And it was even more exciting because obviously that graphic novel is not out yet, but I could see how I could take that story and adapt it into a game. So it would be the perfect companion piece to the graphic novel and vice versa. So if you read the graphic novel and then you played the game, it would expand that world. You know, between chapters, extra bits could happen that would kind of be in the game, because essentially it is that story. So that's how we came to start working on it. And Steve had a fantastic artist called Yulia who did all the artwork for the graphic novel, and a great editor and co-writer called Ken Reynolds. And I've worked with, you know, all of them on Supertime Village. Suddenly I was not a solo dev anymore. And I had this team, and it was fantastic. And like a global team, because Yulia originally from Ukraine, Ken's in Norwich. I wouldn't say that was that global, but you know, it feels global. It's up north somewhere, but and it was great. I was suddenly working with a team, and it felt like a whole new experience. So before I keep talking forever like I do until someone stops me, that's how we started working with each other, and the nucleus of the game began.
I'm not surprised that the origin is a graphic novel, because as soon as I saw sort of the first screenshots, I went, graphic novel? So that made me, like, at first I didn't know. More and more games are leaning into the sort of pure story, bare minimum gameplay. So I wondered if that was the direction you're going with this. But it sounds like you're working really hard to, like, sort of turn it into a full-fledged game too. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a, you know, it would be pointless to take the graphic novel and just panel for panel convert that into a game. You know, the game, it follows the same basic story and structure, and it's got the same sort of messages to it, and it's got the same conclusion, I guess. But the way James has designed the game is, you know, as a player, you take it into lots of different directions and take it lots of different locations. I mean, James mentioned that, you know, expanding upon it, the graphic novel, I guess, is quite short. It's more of a graphic novella. So it's essentially like 75, 80 pages. And you can only do so much in that. Whereas with the game, it's longer and there's more scope to do more of it. So it goes, there's new locations. We see more of the village than we do in the novel. We can dive into the backstory a lot more. There's a whole lot more. And when I say we can dive into, you know, the player can do all that, and the player makes all those choices. You know, there's no, reading a graphic novel is a very different experience. You know, it's very passive. You bring a part of yourself to whatever you read, but with the game you are taking control, as well as bringing all your own I don't want to say baggage, but you know, your own backstory, I guess, to it as well. Do you know what I mean? It's like
and on that as well, I think, you know, we've come up with new characters like because of where the point and click, you know, game has gone in terms of its story. You know, totally new kind of ideas have come in, which is really fun. And you know, I love writing puzzles, and I love kind of backward working them out, if you know what I mean. And it's been real fun taking a moment in that graphic novel and making that become a whole kind of set piece of, you know, puzzle that opens a puzzle, and suddenly, you know, non-linear, right, we're in this village or in this section in Act One, and I realize that there are these, you know, I need to kind of please the villagers somehow to make something happen. And each one of those has that puzzle that you have to go and explore. So yeah, it's definitely not a just telling the story, walking through the story. It's definitely, okay, if you're a Quick fan, you're gonna love it.
That was going to be my question. So clearly, yeah, as you mentioned, it's going to be a puzzle game. It's not just your walkthrough. But so you'd played adventure games in the past, obviously, and you created them. And you mentioned that you pitched the idea to is it Steve? Steve or Steven? Tell me if I'm taking liberties.
You can call me what you like. I've been called much worse than either of those. But no, Stephen always feels like I'm being told off by my mum.
Oh,
so Steve's cool. We're here, we're cool with that.
So we'll go with Steve. He pitched the idea of turning your graphic novel into an adventure game. Did you play adventures in the past?
No is the short answer. So I've not been a massive gamer. Now, I have had a console when I was a teenager. Sure. But then I fell out of it and played, you know, puzzle games on my phone occasionally or whatever. And then so James had to kind of
piano and guitar and did that stuff instead.
I was an artist, darling. I didn't
play life.
My daughter is a big gamer, which, and I'll come to why that's important in a tick. But for me, I'd kind of fell out of it. So James had to kind of induct me a little bit, and you know, he gave me some good examples of games to play and mess around with. But yeah, because I've got a 10-year-old daughter, she's always, you know, big obsessed with games. And one of the things that's quite nice is the premise of Sleepy Time Village is a guy, a father who's a workaholic, neglectful, falls asleep in a cab on his way to a meeting and wakes up in this, basically in the magic roundabout or in the night guard and in a children's storybook world. And when originally creating that, I wanted children's storybook characters who would be terrifying for adults but would appeal to kids. So my daughter is an artist, which is something we've encouraged since we were young. She's great. She's got her own style and everything. I would say that because I'm her father, but she is genuinely very, very good. She's better than I was at her age, and which is, our children will surpass us and all that.
Right.
So she was creating all these little characters. So I was like, oh, this could be quite good. So we took some of her characters. You know, she was doing these things from when she was 3 to 5, and they were terrifying. You know, it'd be like this kind of paper doll type character, and it would just have these dead eyes, these terrifying dead eyes. Or, you know, there was a rabbit and it looked like it would tear your head off. But she thought they were amazing and cute. And, you know, to a child, they were amazing and cute. So we took those, and Yulia, took them and interpreted them and brought them into a kind of sort of house style, for lack of a better way of putting it. And we had her involved in that sense. So for her, it's also been super exciting because she does play these games a lot, and she's now seeing one which, unfortunately, because daddy is a potty mouth, there are some rude words in the game. So we have had to have the whole, you can hear that word but you can't repeat it conversation.
I'm sure that'll work.
But for her, it's amazing.
Although she's, I may add, these,
go on.
I was going to say, we do have a option in the game to turn the swearing off now.
We do.
Just to say.
Okay.
I should have known that, and I should have not polluted areas. damn it. But no, so you know what I mean? It's great for her seeing these characters come to life. You know, first it was great for her seeing them come to life in as a book. And then secondly, suddenly James gets involved and they are moving creatures with voices. I mean, she's provided the voice for one of them, and it's like this amazing thing for her where something that she's into has become a real thing that she's had input into.
That's incredible.
She's 10 years old and she's already credited. How great is that? An early game dev.
And interestingly, in the game and in the demo, you can if you achieve a kind of little side quest, you can see the original of the characters. So you can see Steve Daughter's sketch, you know, the drawings of them, which is kind of fun. And I thought I'd throw in there as well the 2 point-and-click games I sent Steve links to convince him that this would work. From this same company, I sent him links to Franbo and Little Miss Fortune.
Yeah, Little Miss Fortune is amazing. That's the one that grabbed me because it's the art, the sound, you know, everything about that is, the sense of humor is incredible.
Yeah. But twisted.
Yeah. Well, that is my sense of humor. Sorry.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it was great. You know, like a it was very much you know, one especially when playing that game, it's like, right, this could absolutely fit Sleepy Time Village. You know, it's because it's quite a sweet story. You know, it's not like a it's got the trappings of horror, I would say, but this is not a horror story per se. Would you, I don't know, James, what do you reckon, mate? I'd probably
It's not horror. It just has that kind of unsettling,
edge. Yeah.
eerie edge to it. So like every, it's like when something is like over sweet, really over sweet to the
Yeah.
point of like, I'm feeling a bit,
Right, right.
but yeah, it just has that
Uncomfortable.
kind of everything's fine, but it's not like you've left the iron on feeling. There's something you can't quite. I mean, obviously, it's a grown man in a
Very
children's world,
Stepford-like
but
kind of,
yeah,
right?
exactly, Stepford Wives. That's the feeling. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's because if you watch, I mean, when you're a when you become a parent, you have all these sort of big ideas, right? You're not gonna make your kids let your kid, you know, you're not just gonna stick your kids in front of a TV and leave them to it. But basically, you get woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning. You
And
need
that's what
some
you
good.
do.
You just you yeah you it becomes a crutch. We're over in the UK, we've got this thing called CBeebies, and they have a bedtime hour, and it's all designed. It shows are designed to help kids get ready for sleep and to sort of wind them down. But it's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. There's a show called Moon and Me, and there's a character in it called Collywobble, who's like a clown, a kind of puppet clown, and it scares the hell out of me. A friend of mine sent me a picture where they'd taken a still from it of Pennywise coming out of the drain and replaced it with Collywobble, and that it haunts me to this day.
Of
If
course
you
it does.
Google Collywobble, be careful.
No, yeah, with a name like Collywobble, you know somebody was like pulling
Yeah,
one
they knew what they
over
were
on us.
doing.
Like,
If
yeah,
you
well, this will pull.
associate
And that,
anything with Pennywise the clown, that's scary.
yeah.
It's got
I actually find Collywobble more terrifying than Pennywise, and this
All
is aimed at
right. Okay.
children. Pre-10,
Wow.
pre
I love it.
yeah.
I definitely have to check that out. Okay.
Yeah.
So, for those who aren't familiar with the game, you told us a little bit. It sounds like a fascinating sort of dream world. Can you give us just sort of the elevator pitch about sort of what the plot is actually about?
It's a version of, did you have a TV show over there called Life on Mars? Did that make it over to you?
I know
No,
I've heard of it,
forget
but
that.
I've never
Okay.
seen it if it does.
Forget that then. Let's move swiftly on.
Okay. Yes.
So
Nothing like
it's
Life on Mars.
essentially a workaholic father who's neglecting his family is falls asleep in a taxi on the way back from a, oh, sorry, on the way to a meeting. He wakes up in a fantasy land, a children's storybook world, surrounded by creatures who only talk to him by using their own names, and has to work out how he got there, why he's there, and how the hell he gets out.
Right.
And
Okay.
on top of that, as one like extra sentence, there's an
Oh.
omnipresent narrator,
Oh, yeah.
like in these children's TV shows, who is suddenly talking to him, and he's a very kind of bitter, angry chap. So his path to redemption is to obviously accept all this, and that could be his way out. One other great thing about the game is there are flashbacks throughout, which paint the picture of his life. So you see what he's like with his what he was like with his child. You see what he was like with his wife, and you see what he was like as a kid. So you get this kind of the different moments throughout the game. You learn more about why he is who he is, and why when he does have moments of redemption, you see the flip as to why they're important.
I mean, it's basically it's about parenthood and creativity and rediscovering that joy of, you know, when kids create stuff, it's really natural and they don't think about it and they don't have any inhibitions. And we add inhibitions to ourselves as we get older. And it's about just rediscovering that joy of creating just for the fun of it. I think, you know, James and you know, it sort of alluded to this earlier, but we're both pretty similar in this, is in that we both like making stuff. That's why we get on so well, is, you know, we like making stuff, and we make like we like making lots of different things, and the game really is kind of explores that through the lens of parenthood.
Yeah, one thing I'm really interested in, anything that there's a narrator in, I love, especially when it comes down to an adventure game, love having a narrator. So are you saying it's like a fourth wall type of thing? Like he,
Yeah, exactly. So in the opening of the demo, kind of Rufus wakes up and he's like, where am I? What's going on? Like, what is going on? Mm-hmm. Help. Hello. Hello. Who's there? And then this voice, you know, speaks to him.
Yeah.
This very melodic kind of, you know, children's
fruity,
show.
Yeah.
A bit Brian Blessed-esque, you know, that kind of, but very, you know, sing-along, which obviously freaks him out even more.
And a lot of his dialogue
it's like,
rhymes.
If this world's God. Yeah. Mm. So, but even the narrator has a kind of, even though it's very like, you know, as I say, children's TV show like voice, and the words are very playful, as if talking to a kid. It has still has an undertone of like, are you gonna kill me?
The narrator does threaten him quite a bit. You know, it's like he's prodding him along, but he's not particularly helpful.
Yeah, don't be naughty, Rufus. You know, kind
like,
of
like Wizard of Oz, but just with more acid, right?
Yeah, yeah, love it.
It's the most fun character to write for, because you are just basically, you know, taking the mickey with this big booming Brian Blessed voice.
I'm gonna put you on the spot here, guys. Your own sort of scariest dreams. Do you have one recurring, one time, anything? And did they make it into the game?
I had a terrifying one this week, actually, which
perfect.
But it has, which obviously is too late to make it in the game, and it wouldn't be appropriate. I've been reading this book called Nuclear War, a Scenario by Annie Jacobson, and it's absolutely terrifying. And then I have this dream where I'm in London. I'm in outside a pub with my friend Jim, and
sounds horrible so far.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. Well, then a giant mushroom cloud goes up, and it's all very. I literally got jolted awake by the shockwave of a nuclear explosion coming to me.
Wow.
In a
that
dream.
Took a dark turn, I gotta say.
Yeah. Don't read books, kids.
That's my one,
and please don't laugh, and please don't judge if you don't like this band. That's fine. The reason I very much like this band is because I play bass and I love studying bass.
I am so prepping to judge.
I know. And I learned to play bass by studying the bass tab to Blood Sugar Sex Magic by the Chili Peppers. So I have a kind of love for the Chili Peppers, and I always go and see them. Even though some people don't like them, even though they might not be as good as they used to, I still go and enjoy them. So my recurring dream, of which my other artist friend loves this so much, he actually wants to make like a little comic strips of my dreams, because like once a month I will have a dream where I'm hanging with the band, and it seems that they like me, or I'm the fifth member of the band suddenly, and we're all, something's great's about to happen. And then, and here's an example, like, you know, bassist Flea has hurt his hand and can't go on, so I'm like, well, I'll fill the spot. And then I get up, but my bass is suddenly made of cake, and I can't I can't play the bass in front of
all these
people.
Yeah, I would think that'd be a bit out of tune. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I regularly have these dreams where I'm almost about to make it with the Chili Peppers or play with the Chili Peppers, but something like that happens. That's just my recurring dream. I don't know.
Performance issues, man. Yeah, I hear you.
Let me tell you, anytime you want to come, we'll bring you up on stage, because I am Chad Smith, or at least according to everybody on YouTube that says that I look like Chad Smith, the drummer.
Well, there you go. There you go.
I'm telling you, like that. Yeah, so many people always say it's a. But yeah, I'm not. I can't play drums.
I've spent the whole of this podcast I've spent thinking you were Chad Smith, so actually I'm a little bit.
Yeah, just so we're clear.
I'm walking. No Chad, no Steve.
Trickery.
Yeah. Well, that's great. We're going to talk about your Kickstarter, but before we do, I just want to quickly sort of bounce back to the Mystery of Woolly Mountain. Just sort of thought that was kind of fully in the past, but it's not. There's some news on the Woolly Mountain front too, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know me again. I just keep adding projects to myself. Obviously, Woolly Mountain is been out five years this month. In fact, last week it was its 5-year anniversary.
How did that happen?
I know, right? And like with anything, every few months or year, I update it, find little bugs or tweaks, or people tell me stuff and I tweak it and I add. And as I'm tweaking that bug, I get sucked in and, you know, tweak loads of stuff. And then I thought to myself, you know what? I need to learn how to put it onto iPhone. So I spent some time doing that, and it is now on iPhone and iPad. So you can buy it on iPhone, iPad. I'm very pleased that I you know, managed to do that. Plus, we just released a whole load of DLC on all platforms, streaming platforms, so on GOG, Steam, the rest of it. And it's a really cool interactive like Sonic ebook, we call it, which is the original story of Woolly Mountain, but with the original soundtrack, and you can click and interact. So there's been loads of kind of cool stuff we've been adding to it. And I do plan, amongst everything else, fingers crossed, touch wood, to bring it to Xbox next. So Woolly Mountain is still lives, still breathes.
Still lives, absolutely.
Yeah.
And in different forms. That's the Sonic ebook thing, really. Oh, okay. This sounds
interesting. Yeah. It is very cool. If you haven't checked it out, I do recommend it. Drawn by my wonderful friend Ed Harding, who is actually doing all the art for my other game that I'm creating. So, good stuff.
All right. Huh. So after people have run out and bought Woolly Mountain, they can back your Kickstarter. You've got a Kickstarter coming up and probably will be started already by the time this show airs. So tell us about
that. Right. So it's either happening right now, or if it's April 25th right now, that's when it began. So for a full month, whole of May, we'll be doing our Kickstarter. And we have a lot of cool things happening simultaneously. There's a really cool... which may have passed, but we did it. If you were there, thanks for coming over. Cool. WASD, or WASD, which is in East London, and we're showcasing Sleepy Time Village there, which is going to be great. We're in the next issue of Debug Magazine as well, a little feature on Sleepy Time Village as well. And there's another kind of event we're being part of, which is in Canary Wharf in London on May 16th as well. So there's a lot of cool things, like perfect timing for the run of the Kickstarter. And I've done a couple of Kickstarters, obviously one for Woolly Mountain, one for one of my band's albums. And I love Kickstarters and I hate them because, you know, to your point earlier, the stress and the obsession, you know, when your mobile pings and you've got another refresh. Pledge comes. Yeah, exactly. So, I'm looking forward to...
Someone refunded their pledge? How dare they?
I
know. So I'm looking forward to it, but I don't know, because Woolly Mountain exists, you know, and I've been building community with, you know, Discord much, much, much more than I ever did then. I really don't know how it's gonna go. So you know, I'm excited to find out, but it could break me as well. So
we'll leave that not to question. I will release this on the 25th. So today,
amazing!
Congratulations on your Kickstarter
launch day!
Let's go! Launch day. Yes,
so and you're already funded. All right!
Yay!
But you know what? I can't believe all those people went and backed it just from the first 20 minutes of this. Legends.
I tweeted it 20 minutes ago. We're good.
But this sort of brings us to a topic that I know is obviously very important to all of us. And like, let's sort of open this up into a kind of roundtable discussion of like, how do we reach a new audience? How do we get out of our own little community bubbles? Now, you guys are kind of interesting in the sense that, in a way, you're not in the same bubbles. Like, Steve, you're an artist and musician and stuff like you have your own sort of community, and followers, I would imagine. And then, James, you've got sort of gamers who follow you. So, you know, hopefully that will sort of give you more exposure than a standard game, but just like in general, let's talk about how do we get people to hear about our projects that sort of maybe wouldn't otherwise.
It is one of the hardest things. It's definitely one of the hardest things, because you build up to a point and then you're just in your echo chamber. How do you kind of get out of there? You know, and weirdly for me, again, it was an extra movement of excitement until possibly that became an echo chamber too. But I think some good advice I got from a friend of mine on Discord, Summer B, you know, she was very much like, well, find other avenues. And I was like, well, like what? And actually, but I was like, of course, I was like, well, I don't ever post on Reddit because I just don't ever think about that. That's a, I don't know it enough. I don't know, you know, the interface, which isn't hard to work out if you look at it for 2 seconds, but you become very comfortable within, you know, the zones that you know how to work. So Reddit became, you know, suddenly I'm actually getting some new people who are leaving comments and saying, I really like this bit, or I like this thing. And I was like, well, that's really good, until maybe you feel that you're again saying the same thing. And I think it's a combination of, I think it's down to you to say different things and not the same thing over and over, but all, you know, as well as trying to get into other groups that you might not know exist, or, you know, asking. Like one of the things I hadn't really tried and do every now and then, which really does get that connection, is that is, you know, the old A or B. Do you like version A of whatever it is from my game, or version B? And Steve, you may have noticed this one recently. So we have a son, the son in our game, that like Gaga is the name of the son. Well, that's what the son says. And the rays in the comic on the sun didn't really work in the game. I wanted something a little more kind of tinier, less faded beam. So I had this drawn like a sunflower, and I had another one drawn more like your kind of classic sun rays. And that got great traction. And it wasn't that. And it wasn't just a pretend, I know which one I'm going to use anyway.
Right.
I'm just.
No, I mean, we did traction. Ignore them, right?
Yeah. But you listened. You really listened before. Well,
no, luckily, I think that's.
They all agreed with us. They all agreed. Luckily, they all agreed with the one we wanted to go with. But it was really good because people, you know, it was a voice. And I was like, well, this is really interesting. And maybe that's a way. I just think at the end of the day, people can see through your kind of that you're selling, whereas you've got to try and switch it to a actual interesting stuff, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what I found interesting about Kickstarter, because when we, so when I ran some of the comics ones we did with Comic House, I found, I went into that experience absolutely terrified, you know, just thinking I'm going to come out of this an anxious wreck. But Kickstarter does actually have a community. So a lot of the comics backers I had were not people I actually knew or had encountered on socials. They were totally out of my bubble. You know, there were my friends and family and people I know and people who've backed previous work or bought previous work or whatever. But there was actually this whole little community of comics Kickstarter sort of super backers. So that, and I found that quite an interesting experience. But you know, James is saying about the AB trick. I mean, I, as much as it's sort of painful, particularly for me, because I the idea of being on video is horrific, I found with the band recently that actually we've moved to doing a lot of video stuff over the last couple of weeks, and that's actually helped pick up a new audience as well. And there's people coming into that that I have no idea what they who they are or why they're, well, I'd like to think the reason they're listening is because the product's really good, right? That's exactly it. But you know, the you know, that's, it's interesting that putting that sort of content out there is, I hate the word content, putting art out there, you know, stuff that's not necessarily just photos or text or putting video out as well. You know, even stuff that isn't necessarily super polished, you know, it doesn't have to be all.
It doesn't have to be super polished, I don't think.
No, look at me, I'm looking all pristine and perfect and
perfectly polished.
Housing.
Yeah.
I mean, I did my head before.
You
I came
do,
on,
Steve, so I'm just. Yeah. Don't talk to me about not looking pristine.
This
the
whole
handsome
thing.
Rock star guy he's talking about. Yeah.
Collars popped, get the boys. In a good way, though, like for real.
Yeah. And of course, yes.
I don't have that. If I had that confidence, I'd be doing it as well.
I don't have that confidence. Literally, I've just put a jacket on and hope for the best.
He hides behind his beautiful hair. That's what you do.
Yes. Well, yeah. Okay.
I'm actually a really, really awkward person.
I don't get that.
Well, we have somebody who does a lot of videos ourselves, like Joshua. You regularly put up very, very fun videos. So, like, but and this is something for us too. Like, how do you, like, we've got our followers, our YouTube followers, kind of thing. But how do you get a next one?
Well, you know, I mean, the thing is, it does work because, like, I got to know you guys, you know, through other kind of forums and things. It's like it does kind of, or someone who likes, you know, something else point and click also likes you guys, and then, you know, I follow you, and, you know, so
it, network.
Yeah.
That's actually something that I've thought of this, oddly enough. You don't really think about, I've thought of this since I was 15, 16 years old when I started, you know, bands and all of that. And Jack and I haven't really talked much of this. You probably think I'm just this, I got these harebrained ideas all of the time, just like that seem like, oh, that's a lot of work or anything. But I've always looked at it kind of like from playing Connect Four. You know how you can't get all of them at once. And it's those who expect for something immediately to pop off is the ones that, throughout my experience, you know, in music or other endeavors that I've done, they oftentimes fail, you know, because they feel like they fail up front. I've always looked at everything, you know, I believe I'm going to be here for the long run. So you need to add other pieces, you know, to where the fact where you are established and you can do nothing, or nobody can avoid you. So if, like, for instance, in music, I couldn't open up, or for some of the bands that I wanted to open to. So I started my own label and signed my own bands to where I couldn't be ignored. And eventually I started playing with, like, some of the larger bands. The same type of thing with, you know, my radio career, podcasts, you know, Instagram, all these things where you couldn't be ignored. Next thing, somebody wants you. And that's what we're trying to do as well with, like, in the adventure game genre, we'll cover things from all angles to where, you know, hopefully people can't help but see you. And if you got a good product, then, you know, you'll gain more and more traction from the networking side of it.
I think that's a really good shout, actually, that persistence piece. You know, it is about just and just throwing yourself out there. And it's really easy. Like, you know, when James came to me in the first, I would never have gone to James and said, hey, you know, even though I loved Woolly Mountain, I didn't want to have the balls to go and talk to him and say, hey, do you want to take this thing? And James came to me, and, you know, because you do, there's this natural fear of putting something out there. You know, when we have a publisher for the graphic novel, and when I was sending that off, it was terrifying, you know, like, and I did a book with Image Comics, who are, you know, quite big, and, you know, really having that on my CV is quite a good thing for a comics creator. I still find the idea of putting myself out, I mean, I do it because otherwise I'm just, I don't do it as much as I should do. It takes you out of your comfort zone, and, you know, like you say, the persistence and just keep doing it. It's like, okay, if I want to do that, I need to keep doing this and keep doing that. You know, it's you just got to keep trying everything, I guess.
And if you got a good art, if you got a good product, if you got something that you truly believe in, it's all you have to do is just get it out there, and eventually, you know, people will come to you.
And if it doesn't work, learn from it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, what did you do? What could you have done better? Try something else. Put all that learning into the new thing.
Well, and the name that you've made in the past too. I mean, some of those, the people that liked what you do,
they'll come over.
They'll follow you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because it is about, like you say, it is about the individual making stuff. We go right back, full circle, to, you know, what we were talking about at the beginning. It's the person making the thing, and we can't help but making things in all different genres of stuff, because we like different things in different genres, but be it music, be it novel, graphic novels, comics, or, you know, computer games. It's it's still that artist making it. And if you like the artist, like you said, you will go from, you'll follow all their endeavors, you know.
Without being a you know, whatever, but I will always listen to a band that you're in because I know you and I like you, believe it or not. Yeah. And so a year and a half into working together, he finally says it. But yeah, but also I loved stuff like Helmholtz Resonators. I thought they were an you know, you were an amazing live band and so on. So I will give stuff a listen and a chance because I have that connection of enjoying that. For, you know, obviously I liked Night Terrors as well. I'm not just talking about a 10-year-old project, but you know, you follow that, and it's, I guess it's the same. You know, it's just trying not to fall out of contact with people, right? Because you've got your bubble, but it's very easy, you know, especially now that everyone's so separate and, you know, it's harder. Well, it's harder on some levels. It's harder on some levels to stay in contact with people in person, but certainly with socials and so on, it's easier to keep in contact with people so that when it's easier for me to know that you're doing a cool thing, or a friend of mine released a track today that was absolutely banging, and it's like someone I haven't seen for months in person, but it's like, oh great, new track,
yeah,
brilliant,
yeah. And I can still like show them I'm their friend and show my support by
you don't have to have a 10-minute conversation,
yeah.
Like we are, you know, that's the world that we're living in right now. We can still be friendly or more than just associates by associating with them through, you know, social media and supporting what they do. And
yeah,
Jack, totally. You did the same thing. You put yourself out there. That's how you're where you're at now, 20 years ago.
Well, actually, I'm a little different. Well, I don't know. I'm sort of more in the sort of quiet developer camp, sort of not by nature, but just because I'm so busy sort of doing the work, I don't have time to kind of get out there and be pushing it. And I find that with a lot of developers too. They're absolutely horrible at promotion, not because they're, you know, socially awkward or like Steve here, but
I said it. I'm not.
Because they just don't have time, and they, or their, you know, their language limits them or whatever. So, and I think it's in this day and age, especially, it's sort of social engagement, which is you have to get out there now. So this is one of the reasons why I like having the podcast now. I used to be a name on a page, and that was sort of it. And all my work was sort of in the shadows, and I was proud of it and stuff. And it was, I focused on quality. That's fine. But, you know, I think you have to be more out front now. You have to have a name. You have to have a face if you hope to sort of get.
There's no.
Yeah, no, I don't think there is. You know, and unfortunately, one of the things with developers, I find, which is unfortunate, like I said, a lot of they're horrible at promotion. They don't have time. They're not good at it. Whatever. So more of them have started sort of outsourcing that work to PR firms. Who are sort of much more professional, and they send out press releases and stuff like that, which is fine, but it's so impersonal. There's no connection. There's no, like, I literally pour through dozens and dozens of press releases every single day. And if you're just one of those, it's easy to just, you know, dismiss them. And I think if, like, developers really want to, sort of succeed, they have to get out there themselves somehow in some form.
It just makes such present. A difference.
Well, I completely agree, because like you said there, those companies, you know, can be great or whatever, but essentially they have a they have a template that they will put things through when they hire you, right? Here's a press release, here's, you know, the same kind of layout or format as the last one, bam 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 bam. Whereas it's the person who does something completely out of all the ordinary, memorable, you know, like turns up outside your house, stands on the car and plays the big, you know, ghetto blast like in that movie, right? You know, like to tell you that you might call the police on them and say, get off my lawn, but the point is you'll remember that for the rest of the day. And you'll remember who it was, what they were saying, but like you say, you're just going, no, I don't know, you know, it's just another email with an attachment or whatever, I'm not interested. So you've got in social media and in whatever you do and post, you've got to kind of try and either think of something really memorable, or you're lucky enough that you have a natural comedic or just clever charm about you that in everything you write, yeah, like stands out from the crowd.
But
and
it's got
you're
to not be con oh go on. Sorry, I was going to say it's got to not
yeah
be contrived, right? You know, if
and
you
be natural. No, but it's got to be natural.
Yeah,
it's got to be natural.
yeah. Because you get seen, you know, if you're doing it for clicks, you know, people do see through that, right? And it's
Yeah.
it's you've got to do all this stuff, but also be natural. Yeah, no,
Yeah.
it's do you know what I
Yeah.
mean? It's
Yeah.
it sounds
Yeah.
there's, it sounds almost contradictory, but
You're right, yeah.
it is contradictory, but it is, you know,
No, but it shows how hard it is.
Yeah,
well, you
it's
could
a
be
balance.
you. There's a lot of like developers who are known now more for their putting their faces out there, you know, more for their weekly, you know, hey, I'm out here, I'm talking, ask me anything,
yeah.
the way that they talk. And we like them. We want them to succeed, whether and they'll say, you know, my personality's, it's not there. You know, I'm being me, but I'm still being outgoing as me. And we like them more for it. Or I mean, at least I do. And yes, you can tell when something is contrived and synthetic. And that could be a negative if you try to fake that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I thought sort of, you know, we've talked about this before. I thought that was one of the sort of big secrets to Sierra's success originally. Obviously, they made great games too, but they really put themselves out there as people. And I think the community got to know them and embrace them as people. Oh,
yeah.
Roberta Williams, Jane Jensen,
yeah.
Al Lowe, you know, like, you know, we became attached to the people as much as to the games. And that's why we still remember them. That's why they're at our Adventure Game Fanfare coming this summer. Sorry, that wasn't,
nice.
I didn't set that up for
smooth.
No,
company
man.
Textbook,
strictly coincidental.
Amazing.
You can't pass up an opportunity.
I'm taking notes and learning.
Yeah. From the master. No, but you know, you're completely right, because it's a bit like, you know, when you mentioned Wizard of Oz earlier, it's like peeking behind the curtain is actually really beneficial, because, you know, I want to know who made the game. I want to like think what they were thinking, like what were they thinking when they made that thing? Like, where did they get that idea from? What inspired them? And like, you know, to learn about, you know, all our kind of heroes from the point and click world and get to know them, you know, the Gilberts, the Schaefers, the, you know, the, all the others you mentioned there, and some of the new guys coming through, right? You know, it's really good to see the face and be like, oh, you know, and why not have a bit of celebrity about it? You know, that's fine. Like, it's great to meet them, you know, and more and more, I think people are, as you mentioned, they now know that's a good thing if they have the, you know, again, the character to put up with people, if you know, if they're into, if they have the social openness.
Awesome. Yep. I love this. I'm so glad Jack pitched this little segment to me, and I'm like, yes, thank you. And for that reason, I think people do like to, you know, see behind the curtains. They do like to know, you know, see people as people, not just this is Jack as Jackal, this is Joshua, you know. Heck, I mean, like, I've had so many people reach out to me over the past couple of weeks because they noticed that I was having a hard time. Like, yeah, like, it's reality, you know. I had some medical things going on, and so many people were so genuinely loving, like, loving towards me. And I truly feel that, because, you know, we have built relationships with people, and we are, or me specifically, I'm not afraid to, you know, to fall and struggle or something that makes me more real to friend.
Right, because they are too.
Oh,
everyone out there is falling and failing and stuff too.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, okay, you're not.
Everyone's got medical issues, and if you say you don't, you're a liar, you know, in one way or another, you know, or something.
Or know somebody who does, or whatever.
Right.
Just,
I think there's something
or not
quite
even.
Nice about
just,
that. I was going to say, I think there's something quite nice about that connection, right, where, you know, if someone, your friends and family obviously check in on you, but when some absolute stranger checks and says, I know how you're feeling, or, I've been through that too, there's that great connection there. And I always found that, when doing the book Kickstarters and stuff, when your friends and family, you feel like, oh, well, they're obviously going to tell me it's, they're going to give me a pat on the head for turning up and doing it. And then when you get these absolute strangers who get in contact and have got nice words to say about a thing you've done, the first instinct is to be like, oh, that's a bit weird. But it is really nice. It's a bit, I don't want to say validating, because that makes me sound really shallow, but it is, do you know what it is?
Yeah.
It's connecting with strangers who are, who see something or understand something or get on the same level with you or something. And it again comes back to connection, right? It's just really, a really lovely thing to experience.
Yeah.
One of the words mentioned earlier was network. And sort of we've made a point of sort of establishing a network of content creators, Space Quest. I shouldn't even name them all. One Short Eye. I'm going to forget somebody. Conversations with Curtis.
Adventure Game Geek.
Adventure Game Geek, yes, thank you. And anybody I left out, I'm sorry.
Laura and
yeah, Cressup and thank you. But yes, it's sharing each other's work. Like, we can all put ourselves out there, but if we don't have others sort of amplifying it, like you talked about, you tell somebody if you like something, and then they may tell somebody. And so I think that's the other part of it. You can put yourself out there as much as possible, but I think if we support each other as much as we can too, that really makes, like, that's what, like, you can send a sound to that direction, but if it just ends there, that's as far as, but if it reflects off that, then all of a sudden you've got some, nice acoustics.
I would always check stuff out if someone recommends it, whether it's books, whether it's games, whether it's music, if someone puts something out and says, I think this is really, some of my favorite records of the last couple of months have come from a friend of mine just saying, oh, you should check this out, this is really your cup of tea. And there's this obscure band that I absolutely adore now. And that just comes from having a conversation and a recommendation, so it's
Tell
really
me later.
Important to share this stuff.
I want
to
hear that. I want to hear what that. I want to hear what that band is.
They're called Walt Disco. They're amazing.
Okay.
Terrible name. Amazing. New romantic style. It's proper 80s.
Okay.
There you go. But I think you're right as well, because when you fall for a developer kind of thing, you want to know what they liked in the past and what they like now and what they're making for the future, right? So there's so much to kind of find out about and then pass on, which is a great thing.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, what do you say, Jack? You want to have some fun here? Or
it's a good time. I just wanted to finish, like, anybody watching or listening to this, like, you can be part of that too, right? And I would encourage you, if you read an article that you really like, share it with somebody on Twitter or whatever. Or if you, like a demo, tell somebody on Discord kind of thing. It really makes a difference. And like, I hear so many developers kind of leading with, gamers to wish list their games on Steam kind of thing, because it amplifies it. It makes a difference. So, like, I think there's a real sense of community in the adventure genre. And I think the more sort of community oriented we are about promoting works that we enjoy, I think the more it benefits everybody. So
100%.
So yeah, if you're listening, if you like something, tell the world, because you never know who's listening. So
like it
exactly right. So we always close our podcast with a fun little segment, our top five, and today we don't usually kind of bash games, but today we're just going to have a little fun and talk about our favorite or top five sort of stupid games or silly games, and that can mean whatever you want it to.
Could be a good thing. Heck,
it could be a good thing. Yes,
I love Blink 182. They're stupid. Like, I'm ashamed to say I like it. I like, because it's stupid. but I love it sometimes.
It's fun, right? It's fun.
But
it's
if you're in on the joke, then it's fun, right? Yeah, exactly. So, Steve, like, I know you're not sort of an avid gamer, so if you want to do comics or books or anything else, you're welcome to do that as well. But
I'll make stuff up, worst case.
There you go. Yeah, I wouldn't know, so.
People will be searching for this game, whatever you come up with, forever. I can't.
I've got one.
Okay, well, Steve, we'll start with you, and then James, and go around the rest of the room.
I absolutely haven't made this up. It's The Seventh Seal, which is the game of the movie, the Bergman movie, where you have to play chess with the devil for immortality. Yeah, it's a good game. It's by Big Pete, developer from Southend in England, and the graphics are terrible, but it's a super dark story and absolutely phenomenal. And you can find it at bigpete.com.
Okay.
Well, there you go.
Absolutely didn't make that.
No. Well, you've got a website, everything. I'm going to go with like stupid fun games. Parodius, is that how you say it? You know, like, so do you remember Nemesis or what was it called in Konami game? Okay. And like the word, is it Parodius? It's like a parody of Nemesis, which is a side-scrolling shooter that was in the 80s. And then Konami released it on SNES, and it was like taking it and making it all like stupid, basically. If you Google it, you'll find it. It's Parodius.
Okay. I just wrote that down. I'm totally going to Google it. Yeah.
And there's like, you know, many sequels, and it's quite loved. And I remember playing the first one on SNES when they released it, because it was a big hoo-ha. And it was just like really stupid fun, because it's taking kind of a serious 80s shooter side scroller and just making it absolutely kind of like cartoon ridiculous, but still an amazing game. Like it's like some people see it as it's better than the actual, you know, original game that it came from. So I'll start with that one.
Good one.
I guess I get to go next Jack is hosting. Okay. I'm going to go with Plumbers Don't Wear Ties. And of course, that is, everybody has probably at least heard of it. It might be one of the first known narrative choice-based games, definitely adult-oriented. They purposely were trying to be stupid, and the game was stupid. It's just stupid all around. But so essentially it's a plumber, and he meets a girl, and there's some laughs and some tears and some adult oriented fun like going around throughout the game. Plumbers Don't Wear Ties. Oh my goodness. All right.
Well, mine could be good stupid or bad stupid, depending on which side of the fence you're on. I am on the bad side of the fence here. The game is Beavis and Butthead in Virtual Stupidity. I mean, it's right in the name.
Oh, wow. I remember that.
How dare you?
This is what I know.
But here's the thing. It's actually not a bad game as a game. I just despise Beavis and Butthead. I should never be around Beavis and Butthead near a tall building, because I will be tempted to fling myself off of it. But I just like, there's something about it I can't stand. But
Jack,
it's not a bad game.
Okay. My wife loves Beavis and Butthead.
Oh.
And she's of that era. My wife is gorgeous, and she was gorgeous when she was younger, but she went to a prom with someone that she referred to as Beavis. Not because she didn't have options, just because the guy was, he made her giggle. Like, he made her laugh. Come on, you gotta enjoy it, right?
For the record, it's not because I don't enjoy lowbrow humor. I mean, like, I'm into the muck with stuff, but there's something about that duo that really... So that's mine. Okay, Steve, what you got for us?
So, it's a game. It's a very daft game. So I'm a massive, massive Doctor Who nerd, and it is my, it's my favorite. I'm not going to say it's the best, because it's not the best, but it is my favorite TV show of all time. But there is a game on the Doctor Who website called 13, where it's basically a grid, and you have to keep. It's a puzzle game. You keep having to push the pictures of the Doctors into each other to regenerate them, and the idea is to win it. You have to have all 13 Doctors on the grid. And it is a stupid, addictive, ridiculous, silly little game. And I have lost hours of my life.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And
I
I've
agree.
only got I've got as far as Matt Smith, so I'm two off the end.
Okay.
And I just darn it. And unfortunately I recommended it to a friend of mine who also got dragged deep into addiction. And I can find myself, you know, late at night, half asleep, just bashing Christopher Eccleston.
You're an addiction pusher.
I know that feeling.
It's kind of terrible, but it's amazing, and I lost all productivity for at least 2 weeks until I had to tear myself away from it.
It sounds hilarious. I need to quickly forget you ever mentioned it. So
don't, yeah, yeah. It didn't happen.
Right. No. I can't afford the time. So, but no, it sounds amazing.
Okay, on to me. So when I grew up, I was addicted. To my Spectrum 128K. I loved my old computer and I loved all games and all things about it. So this is a game from the 8-bit era on the Spectrum originally, and it's called Everyone's a Wally. Okay? And you play like the dad of the family.
That's got to be Australian. I got to, sorry, I just jumped in and said.
And
maybe
it's very brief. It's very British.
Okay,
there's like phone boxes and like betting shops in there and stuff.
Okay.
And there's like you have your baby son, your kind of like older hippie brother or something. Your wife Wilma, you know, probably a nod to Flintstones. And to me, not only did I love this game, it was very stupid, but I loved it. But you could swap characters, so you could be any of the characters at any point by pressing any a specific key. But they would almost, like, each character would have their own agenda. So they'd go off, you know, into different locations, and you pick, and again, very, reminiscent to kind of point-and-click games, you'd have to pick up objects and go and use them elsewhere in different locations. And I just fell in love with this world, even though it's very, you know, 8-bit rendered. To me, I lived in this, you know, this world. And one of my favorite things I remember is you go into a phone box, and then you're playing this kind of like like asteroids game suddenly, and then you come out the phone box and you're back in like this English British countryside. So I advise you to Google, just for the craziness of it, Everyone's a Wally.
Oh, I will. Oh, getting Googled.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me when you figure out which stupid game that this is. So there are two brothers. They're plumbers. They only like to go left and right. Sometimes they jump. They go in pipes. They save a prison.
Okay. It's going to be Mario, right? I was worried it was going to be something super obscure, and I'm just like,
very
Twitter myself when I go, is it Mario? And it's like, no, Mr. Basic. It's not Mario. It's
Mario for sure. And it's so stupid and it's so wonderful, but it's you think about the premise of what's going on here. So stupid, so simple, but they have managed to make billions upon billions of dollars off of this incredibly stupid series of games about two brothers who apparently aren't really plumbers, but they wear the plumbers outfits and they save a princess and they destroy turtles. Or sometimes, but they always come back, apparently.
That's just a Saturday night around here. It's fun.
Oh, man.
Dressed as a plumber.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Apparently, I've got a thing for plumbers, because I'm sorry to any plumbers who are watching this.
What's
like,
so
I apologize.
What did plumbers ever do to you,
creepy
mate?
Here, but, okay. All right, it pains me to hear Mario being talked about in those, but I accept your argument there. Okay, I don't think I've ever mentioned this game on a podcast before. This is the absolute worst game I have ever played. It is not hyperbole. It's an adventure game called Down in the Dumps. And yeah, I'm sure like three people out there have played it.
Mm-hmm.
Very obscure for good reason. Anyone who hasn't played it, thank your lucky stars that you haven't. This is a bunch of family of aliens that crash land in a dump on Earth. And it's just everything about it is horrible. To call the puzzles moon logic is to not even do them justice. It is like Jupiter logic. This is like, it's so preposterous. There's no chance of figuring things out. And then the capper is this sort of four episodes, and the story just ends. There's no finale. It just kind of ends. The credits roll, and you're standing there going, no what? Closure. What just happened? And I did all that for this? But then, and like, I think nobody, like everyone, well, they're probably so thankful it was over. They did, oh, thank goodness. But but if you go back into the main menu at that section, there's a new entry with a fifth episode, and that actually wraps it up. And like, it's just the most absurd thing imaginable. Like, obviously they didn't even have time to finish putting the game together. So let's get this thing out the door, slap the last episode in the main menu, you know. Anyway, like, just if there was a how-to not to make a game, down in the dumps is, you know, leading the list.
And what platform was that?
It's PC.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Oh, just, oh man. Speaking speaking of things that give you a bad nightmare.
Yeah. Whole, yeah.
Just mentioning it is. Oof.
So sorry for those guys, isn't it? cool. So
no,
I
don't think that's how they intended the game to come out either.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh. Talk about rushed. Wow. Okay, go ahead, Steve, sorry.
That's right, I am having to move on to music now. So I looked up the lyrics while I was on there, because I like lots of different genres of music. I'll go from all over the place. But I do have a bit of a love for old psychedelic records. And at Christmas, I got one of my favourite records on vinyl, which was In the Land of Graham Pink by Caravan. Incredible record. Brilliant grooves, all this amazing stuff in it. But the lyrics the opening lyrics for Golf Girl, I'm going to quote to you, go, standing on a golf course, dressed in PVC, I chanced upon a golf girl selling cups of tea. She asked me, did I want one? Asked me with a grin, for threepence you can buy one, full right to the brim. And I think that's ridiculous and silly and brilliant and absurd.
That is,
and I don't,
yes. It is all of those things. You're right.
All of the above.
All of the above. Yeah. If you explain that, I mean, have any of you been on a golf course dressed in PVC recently?
I personally have not. No, nor encountered one.
What is PVC? It's plastic?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Catwoman.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm never say never. I'm not going to say
right,
that.
Yeah.
No. And I would buy a drink from her if I saw
her. No.
I would buy a drink for her if I saw her.
It's the narrator that's dressed in PVC.
Oh.
So
oh
in this instance, me saying it would be me.
Right. I see.
But okay, yeah, brilliant, that is bonkers.
Brilliant lyric.
Oh, right, so the next one for me, again, back to the 8-bit era. And I think this might not have traveled, I don't know, out of the UK. But anyway, the original game is called Renegade, and it was an arcade by Taito, and it was brilliant. You kind of had to, it was a punch up, and it's beat everyone up, and then move that, you would get on to the next level. And what, you know, one of the great things about it was, like, the groin, you would grab them and knee them in the groin, and everyone would be like, wow, like the 80s, this is very 80s. and you get on them and kind of punch them in the heads, and it was, you know, very 80s kind of pixel graphics, mm-hmm. So it wasn't that offensive maybe for the time, but it was really good. Then there was a home computer sequel called Target Renegade, which is you and your brother, very much like Double Dragon, and you would go off on, it was, you know, really serious. They've kind of killed my girlfriend or whatever, I'm gonna go and get the bad guys. And everyone loved these games. And then, and this is the game I'm talking about, it was called Renegade 3, and suddenly, okay, so imagine the premise, very serious. Suddenly, you've been caught in some kind of time travel, right? And they changed all the graphics to very cartoony, and you're punching dinosaurs on the face and punching, like, Captain Caveman, and, like, and then the next level, you're in the future and these little kind of robots, or you're in the times of knights and dragons and these little squat knights, and you're punching them. And it was just like, what have you done to this brilliant IP and this great story? It's now become this awful gameplay, stupid premise where I'm time traveling. Whereas 1 minute ago, it's all serious. And now what have they done? So Renegade 3, again, Google it. It's regarded as one of the worst kind of sequels ever. So if you do Google it, you'll have much fun with the YouTube videos telling the tale.
Okay.
Wow, that's great. I mean, great in the horrible,
yeah, know, yeah,
absurd sense.
Yeah.
So I have everything I've said so far has been sarcastic, and I've enjoyed that. But this one is going to be truly a stupid one, and it's going to be Leisure Suit Larry Magna Cum Laude.
Oh,
so oh, it's
yeah, and okay.
The whole point of the game is to get laid, and you know that's great. You know, getting laid's awesome. You know, so that's not stupid. However, the point that he's trying to get laid with as minimal effort as possible. You know, he doesn't want to show any respect or anything. We're talking, let's just get this girl drunk as fast as possible. And that's the whole thing. You go from one conquest to the other, and everything about it is completely, completely tacky.
And
the gameplay, it's not even an enjoyable arcade style stuff that goes on in this. It's so bad. It is truly one of the worst games. The premise is bad. Everything about it is bad. And screw you, Magna Cum Laude.
Yeah.
Yes, this is very much post LO, so you know. Don't blame Al for any of this.
Not even
Larry Laffer. It's his disgusting nephew or something like that.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah, I put that out of my mind. I reviewed that game actually, and it was a lot of fun for putting sexual innuendos in there. But other than that, that was like the most fun I got out of the game was writing my own review of it. But
I get you.
now, my next game isn't stupid in its own right. It just has one incredibly stupid thing in it. The game is The Neverhood, which is a really interesting claymation game. Okay, it's quite rare, but generally well regarded and rightfully so. But there's this one section in the game where there's like 20 straight rooms with the walls covered in text, which is essentially like a book out of the Old Testament. And we're not talking Jonah and the whale or the temptation to Job. This is like old school Deuteronomy begats and stuff. Well, this is like as dry as you could possibly imagine. That's an adventure game though. So you think, I better read it because there could be a clue buried in it. And it's like one room after another, and you're honestly, you'll be like tearing out your hair by the time you get halfway through it. And none of it applies at all to the rest of the game. It is strictly background.
Oh no.
But at the end of all that, there's like just lying on the floor is an item that you need. So you can't even, I'm not going the rest of the way, but like, you don't have to read it, but you do have to at least go through I have no idea.
That's just me.
They were thinking to put that in the game. So
that's probably what they were thinking. They're going to get you.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. How did that slip past the publisher too? It's like, yeah, this is fun.
I didn't enjoy that game. That was dull. In fact, I quit. That was one of the games that I quit early on, and I never quit games back then because they're not like now. It's hard to get a hold of a PC game back then, and they were expensive. But
I just so adore claymation that could not play it, but that almost turned me off it. So
yeah, that's bad. That's me.
Okay, that's three rounds, two to go. Steve, take us into round four.
So I'm moving into comics now, and it's not the bit that's silly is how you feel when you're explaining the full premise of this. So one of my favorite comics of recent years, and I binged the hell out of this, is basically, if you're explaining it to a noob, it's the story of a civilization that's been in civil war for millions of years. The civil war ends and they need to come together and rebuild their society, and they go off in all the directions. It's all about how they reintegrate. All of the protagonists of this story are giant robots who transform into vehicles.
Of course. Yes.
It's Transformers Phase 2 by IDW. My favorite.
Not even as cool as GoBots, huh?
It even explores the idea of the Transformer love lives. It is amazing. Like there's one called More Than Meets the Eye, because of the number series, and that one in particular, it's a group of them go off in search of the Knights of Cybertron, and it's a comic as sitcom with lots of emotion and feels, about giant robots who transform into vehicles and airplanes and weapons. And it, literally, if you explain anything about it to someone, you can see the interest until you drop the word Transformers.
Well, yeah. I just want to comment on that. The new
It's brutal.
The new Image Comics Transformers series is amazing. I adore it. I recommend it only started end of last year, and it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's just finished the first arc, hasn't it? It's brutal. It's very different to the IDW, but it's sort of both great, different reasons. Yeah.
Recommendation successfully networked. Very, very well done.
Okay, so on to me. So this is not one game, but it's two games that, unfortunately, it was, even though I loved them, because of what became before, they were ultimately, it was a stupid thing to do, which was to go 3D in Escape from Monkey Island and Broken Sword 3. I played them games and I made sure I loved them games, but you know, it was very difficult to play those games. with the tank-like controls. You know, the writing was brilliant, and it was still a lot of fun, and it's still part of, you know, the story, and I adore it for that. But you know, it was a stupid move. There we go. It had to be done because of the world. Had to be done because otherwise, probably in those days, the publishers wouldn't have allowed a sequel, considering everything was 3D. But you know, I'm just choosing that.
Fandango off that list, though.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
I considered it, but I couldn't bring myself to.
So that's interesting you said that. And here's my get out clause on that one. So Grim Fandango was its own, like, it could only be in that 3D world because it was born to be in that 3D world, and kind of it was right. It works, and I love that game. You know, clunky here and there. However, because the others were serious, going from something so
jump, I got
specific into something that jarred with actually how you play those games to the lover of those games, I think, you know, stupid may be the wrong word, but I just thought I'd pick that, you know, controversial or not, you know, as much as I'd still want them in my collection of those series, you know, I might not return to them as much as the others.
You just gave me an idea for a video to make about video games that jarred us or like changed the pattern or something. And we weren't expecting. I like
change
that.
Change the rules.
Change the rules on me. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. This is going to be my Blink-182 analogy here, where it's not necessarily good writing. It's not necessarily good gameplay. However, it's so stupid and it's so incredible all at the same time. It's Sam and Max Hit the Road. Everything is purposely stupid, but in such a glorious way. It's almost a parody of itself, which I think is artistic. It's brilliant so much.
Yeah.
You have a rabbit thingy. Not a rabbit. He is a rabbity thing. You go all around to some of the silliest, most non-enjoyable places that somehow become enjoyable, like the world's largest ball of twine. Lovely. Sam and Max Hit the Road.
Yeah, good choice.
Yeah, hard to argue.
It's stupid.
All right. Well, I should have done some sort of silly, fun ones, but I tend to gravitate towards things that drove me crazy instead. I'm going to go. Actually, some of the people that worked on Sam and Max might have worked on this one, too. The game was called Insecticide. It was almost literally split in half, sort of half regular adventuring and half kind of action adventure starring insects. You know, duh, where does the title come from? And it was like lots of sort of former LucasArts people worked on it. It was like really interesting. And I think Josh Mandel did some of the scripting for it. So it was like funny, but it was released on PC at least as Insecticide Part 1, which already sucks because, you know, you know, there shouldn't be a to be continued between games to me, if you ask me. The problem is it is not part one of two now. It is just part one, and that's all there ever was. And I still resent it to this day. Part two was released on Nintendo DS or something, I think, maybe, or some console, I forget. But PC, never. We got screwed out of Inside Part Two. So yeah,
I've never heard of that. Was that an adventure?
To me, releasing half a game is stupid. Stupid, stupid, stupid.
was that an adventure game, Jack?
It was half an adventure game, like half complete adventure. And they literally split it in half. Like, so half of it is adventuring, and then half of it was some shooting and light platforming. It's not difficult, but you know, anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have to look at it though.
Half a game, come on. And I still resent it to this, clearly.
yeah, clearly, yeah.
okay, so I'm going to grab my next one because as James props. Will tell you, as a musician, you tend to pick up and accumulate a lot of daft instruments because you see stuff and think it looks quite cool. A mutual friend of ours lent me this.
Okay. All right.
This is, and if for anyone who isn't watching video of this and just listening, you go and look up the Casio DG10. It is a guitar shaped keyboard.
Okay.
The sounds include acoustic and electric guitars, distortion, glockenspiel, jazz organ. It's got a rhythm machine with it, which is absolutely terrible. The strings are made of some sort of plastic. The fretboard is made out of rubber. It requires 10 massive batteries. It looks like something from the 80s. And
very
it
much.
It looks like Fly It.
Is that not from the 80s?
It is from the 80s, yeah. And a friend of mine has I've got it on loan from him. It's really hard to play. It looks ridiculous.
It looks like it's something from Star Wars, like a ship.
It's terribly brilliant.
Yeah,
terribly brilliant.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my very silly but kind of.
So those are false strings. They're false strings. Like, how do you play this?
You played it properly, like a guitar.
Like a guitar? No kidding.
Yeah. It won't get picked up, and to be honest, it's quite the action is like
saves
3 inches
away from the fretboard.
Saves your fingers too a little bit. Yeah, it's you can't bend notes, sadly. And there's a lot you can't do with it. But it does look really cool, and one day I'm going to record a concept album.
Yeah, I want to hear
Casio
it.
Casio DG10. It's
going to
be
must.
Called.
You must.
We're going to hold you to that.
I'm going to call it Casio.
Bad songs.
Follow up a hip hop record called Casio.
Oh,
that's as far as I can push this.
So, okay, yeah,
as long as you could drop it.
I was going to suggest an alternate, but no.
Yeah,
no,
say,
I'm not going there.
Yeah, fine.
All my friends say Steve Casio.
Oh yeah, he's done.
Yes,
he's done.
Oh, okay, right
there. Yeah. So. My last one, then, stems from a movie. So it is game-related, but the main crux of this will be the movie rather than the game. Said actor was on a roll around this time. I think 1991 the film came out, and this actor was on a roll, really could do no wrong, huge blockbusters. And I don't know, I think he kind of had something to do with the script a little bit. So it was his own fault. It was a huge flop. They made a Nintendo NES game of it, 8-bit home games of it, ports of it. And the film is called Hudson Hawk. Bruce Willis.
Yes.
Bruce Willis.
Oh, yeah.
Utterly stupid film. Utterly stupid. He plays a cat burglar. He sings a song with Danny Aiello, I believe is his kind of partner in it. Richard E. Grant is in it as the bad guy. And it is just, I mean, it kind of is so stupid. It actually has a kind of charm to it and a bit cult-like status now, but it is just so stupid. It cost loads of money. He kept tampering or, you know, writing the script, and it flopped like a giant lead balloon. So all these... You know, Ocean Software and whoever made the NES version must have really been sat with these games going, Is that E.T. landfill hole still open?
I think it's a thing with Bruce Willis and City. Have you seen Red? There is the silliest scene in a movie I've ever seen is the bit when he's in the car and it's spinning around, and as it's spinning around, he steps out, pulls out the shotgun, and starts shooting. It's just like, I mean, it's amazing, but it's terrible Bruce Willis, at the same time. Yeah, no, I mean, anyone else, I don't think would get away with it.
Yeah, it could totally happen. It's Bruce.
Yeah. Yeah.
A 65-year-old Bruce.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. I've been too nice throughout this. I did throw one mean one out, but and I hate to do this because a developer was trying to make another one recently, and I just Jack, I'm sorry if we take any heat for this, but the first Tony Tough in the Night of the Roasted
I had a feeling you
Moths,
were gonna go
yeah, everything about it's stupid. The plot is stupid. I mean, the character is stupid. The puzzles are stupid. Everything, the voice, and I'm speaking just from the English American version, was, in case of misfire, you know, it was just stupid. The things that you picked up for an adventure game, we're talking an adventure game. If you pick up stupid things in an adventure game, that's just another day. But the things that you picked up were stupid, stupid. Everything about it was so, so stupid. And it's another one that I quit halfway through. I couldn't waste my life anymore on this. It was wasting my time. Oh,
sounds
man. But people
amazing.
Love it. Some people love it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was an oddball, right? But here's the thing. They made a sequel.
They actually
Right.
And it actually looked pretty good. That it was released in Germany, I believe, and possibly elsewhere, but never in English. So obviously they went to English publishers. Hey, how about the sequel to Tony Tough? They went, that would
Can
be
we
stupid.
Get the same voice actor?
Yeah.
That is the stupidest idea I have ever heard in my life.
We'll get you guys to provide the pull quote, yeah?
Yeah.
In a good way.
Write that down.
Okay.
It's stupid.
Yeah. All right. Because Joshua dared defile the name of Mario in his list, I am going to jump on one of his favorite series, Broken Sword. No. I love Revolution and Broken Sword and Charles Cecil, and all of their games are quite good. And I reviewed this game much more positively than most people now refer to it. It's Broken Sword 4, though. And my only thing here, well, first of all, they went to this sort of 3D presentation and not at all good looking 3D. It was like, what were you doing? The beautiful graphics were a draw. Anyway, so which I don't understand, because Broken Sword 3 was 3D as well and looked much nicer. Anyway,
it
so it looked bad. But the stupid thing is they completely sidelined Nico, who is just one of the most beloved adventure game characters in genre history, and they completely nope, you're not in this. We're gonna have this other kind of blonde bombshell flirting with George all game. It's like, what? And I think that's partly what alienated a lot of fans toward that game.
It was dark,
Josh,
too.
What's that?
Yeah, no, it got dark. Like they kind of changed the writing. It seemed like the where they were going, like he was in a bad place in his life, and he was doing like bail bondsman, you know, working out of a meat factory or something. And that wasn't good. And there was some really stupid decisions that was made. And I think he would agree.
I think, maybe sort of stupid popularity wise, but I still think, like, if you could forget Broken Swords 1-3 and everything after that existed, you would go, just as a standalone game, it's not a good looking game. Nothing will change that, but it's not a bad game in its own right. But people were going, this is not my Broken Sword.
Yeah.
What? Come on. Yeah, you've changed too many rules.
It's that multiverse version, right? Mm-hmm. You know,
exactly.
Another dimension.
Yes.
Well,
put us back in the real.
He references Nico quite a bit too, so it kind of feels like you're knowingly cheating, you're wooing, and not that he and Nico officially got together on any like official capacity or anything, but their there's that thing, you know, and that thing was gone in that one.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
True. Okay, gentlemen, that was stupidly fun.
That was.
And and Steve, thank you for broadening our horizons by bringing in music instruments and comics. And this is that. So, yes, it didn't feel so gamey all around, but great choices all around. Tell us where we can find you on social media, because there are people out there that want to help spread the word, right, listeners? Yes. So where can they find you online?
So, yeah, LightfootBrossGames.com. You'll find everything from Sleepy Time Village on there and all the links to Steam, GOG, Itch, Fireflower games for the demo. You'll find all the information on there, the links to the Kickstarter, everything. You'll find Woolly Mountain stuff on there and other endeavors as well. All our handles are LightfootBrossTM. So, you know, hunt us down follow us on Discord as well. And again, all those social links are on LightfootBrossGames.com. So please help us with the Kickstarter. It would be so awesome. We really can't, you know, wait to get to the end of that month and be actually going, right, let's make the best game we can. So, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
And for those of us here in the States, Lightfoot Bros, without all of the nice little punctuation in there.
Bros. Yeah. We can just spell it out for you.
Yeah.
But, and Steve, obviously you're totally involved in the game too, but you have your own social media.
Yeah. So Instagram is Stephen Horry Makes Stuff, all one word, because I do loads of random stuff. It seemed the obvious one to go with. Some of the music I'm making at the moment is under Prismatic on Instagram, which is but it's Prismatic spelt with a QK. And then I'm on Blue Sky. There's a Facebook page and all that sort of stuff as well. So I am in the process of building a website, but it's not there yet because I need to try and bring all this random stuff into one place. Best places, yeah. Don't do Twitter though, sorry.
You're playing Connect 4, I love it. Connect 4.
Yeah.
And Joshua, how about us? You are our resident social media guy, since I'm the one with his head down in the back. Tell us where people can find us.
All of the socials, Adventure Game Hotspot, you can find. I will say on Instagram, there is an underscore at @adventure_game_hotspot. And anywhere where you consume your podcast, you can get that there too. We have a YouTube channel, obviously, and we also have a YouTube trailers channel, Adventure Game Hotspot for the trailers, Adventure Game Hotspot trailers, and the website. You can go to AdventureGameFanfare.com for tickets for the Adventure Game Fanfare as well. Yep. More to come.
Yep. And of course, AdventureGameHotspot.com, where we get reviews and interviews, and then you can find this podcast, everything. So, yeah, we got a lot going on. Gentlemen, thank you so much. It was a lot of fun having you. We wish you all the best with your Kickstarter and with the game. I love what I've seen of it so far, so I really wish you all the best. And everything you've told me about it makes me even more excited. So thank you very much. And for Joshua and for Steve and James, I thank you all for listening. Follow us, spread the word, tell everyone about everything you like, and we'll see you again next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you.